How is the Old Testament hope different from a New Testament hope? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, host and study guide author for our discussions this quarter on life everlasting, on death, dying, and the future hope. I am Professor Emeritus of Biblical Studies from Walla Walla University School of Theology. My conversation partners, Jody Washburn, Dave Thomas, are also from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Now let's go back to that leading question. How is an Old Testament hope different from a New Testament hope? Or are they the same?
I can't help thinking of this question in terms of prophetic literature imagery, the word pictures that are painted there. And it strikes me how often the pictures of future hope and restoration that we find in the prophetic oracles of hope are essentially almost a turning upside down or a reversal of the curses that are found in something like the end of Deuteronomy, where there's a list of curses. And I can give examples. You know, one of the curses, a sign that you have stepped outside of the blessing of God, is that you will build a house, but heaven forbid, your enemy will come and live in it. You will plant a vineyard, your enemy will eat the fruit. And so the pictures of hope and restoration are painted as a reversal of what was understood as a direct curse from God that was the outcome of these battles. You know, this mm-hmm. being exiled from your place, being all the outcomes of war, basically. So people will live to be old. The lame and blind will be included. They'll be the older people will be watching their children play in the streets. They'll be living in the houses they built.
They'll lend money and not borrow.
Yes, eating from the fruits of trees that they had to plant and then actually wait for them to mature to making fruit.
So I would say, that I think if you look at this on a grand scale, the hopes are essentially the same. Is that there's coming a day when the kingdom of God, which is the kingdom of righteousness, will replace or displace the kingdoms of man, which are decrepit. I think the imagery is very different, because mm-hmm. in the New Testament you have intervention from the sky. In the Old Testament you seem to have the restoration of the world. Mm-hmm. But I think the basic hope is the same, that the broken world in which we live will be displaced or replaced by the, I'll use the word, perfect kingdom of God.
One of my favorite restoration passages is the one in Isaiah 11. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid. Calf and the lion will feed together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp. And the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Nobody had ever seen a world like that. I like to call it God's vegetarian kingdom, where nobody eats anybody else.
But the cows eat straw. They don't eat straw in this world. They eat hay.
If you have a bad harvest, you may end up eating straw.
And I like the one, is it in Isaiah 64 or 5, but it talks about planting vineyards and eating the fruit. And I've told the story before that when we were living in Africa growing up, they built two new houses on the mission compound because two new offices were being opened. And, of course, in those places you had to live off what you grew to some extent. And so my mother took it on herself to go and plant gardens, you know, fruit trees in these two yards. And she, of course, enlisted us, and I remember complaining about it. And she read us that text and said, well, you might not see the fruit of this one, but you can look forward to the one we were.
That's right.
And then we moved away, so I have no idea what happened with those trees. I hope they grew to magnificence and produced oranges and guavas and bananas and papayas.
You know, Dave, your story is making me think of one other element that often just like grabs my attention when I'm going through the prophetic texts with students is what I describe in class as active hope. And an example would be we read Jeremiah 29 to 32 from a very Western consumerist lens. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can go and buy a mug that says, I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you. And we give these to high school students who are 17 years old, graduating. And I don't know if we explain it this way or if it's the way that as high school students we hear it. But that text is often understood as, well, I don't need to worry about what I'm going to be, you know, like what I'll study next year in college. God has plans for me. Everything's all figured out. All I have to do is like figure out his plan basically tomorrow and everything will work out. But in that text, the hope Jeremiah is calling people to is not immediate at all. He says multiple generations are going to be in strange lands, and the best thing that you can do is invest all your time and attention and energy in the shalom, the wholeness, the well-being of the people where you are in exile. When you think 70 years, that's three generations.
Yeah, buy land, get married, have children.
Yes. So in other words, it's actually the false prophets in Jeremiah who tell people, oh, just hole up, right? Put your head down and wait, because in a year or two, this is going to pass.
And I'm not sure that text can be used as a universal promise for all humans. I think it was made to Jeremiah and the remnant, wasn't it?
Well, and we take texts and read them in our new context. But I think what I'm really intrigued by is kind of the idea that, because many people who contribute beautifully to human life do so with a deep recognition that I am contributing to something that started before me and that will continue long after me, and I may never actually see the fruit of what I'm sacrificing for. And there are days that's discouraging, but people hold on.
Yeah, we used to talk about the common good.
Yep.
You know, that I should conduct myself in such a way that those around me and the society benefits the common good. And I may not derive anything particular from that for myself, but I do help create societal good.
Yeah. And that's active hope, that the way I see it in Jeremiah, we recognize we can contribute in that way, even if we never experience our situation.
I think in times past, people even got married for the common good. They didn't get married necessarily for love and romance. They got married because it benefited society and helped create stable things. And so you see these men, I remember reading about them in England, the rich young men would go on these hunting safaris to India, and then they'd come back and decide, well, I need to get married now and have a, you know, and it was a societal obligation for the common good. So
I'd like to return to my opening question, because we've managed to avoid it so far. How does the New Testament hope compare with the Old Testament hope?
I said, I think they're the same.
You said that?
In the big picture, they're the same.
In the big picture.
Yeah.
Are you wanting a Revelation 22 and Isaiah 65 comparison? Is that kind of where you're heading?
Well, it seems to me that the New Testament is much more consistent, positive. Whereas in the Old Testament, you have a lot of loose ends. Is that fair game?
Well, you're going to have to say more now.
It makes sense, because the Old Testament is a collection, a library of texts and letters and documents and musings that probably came into being over many hundreds and hundreds of years and were collected together. The New Testament, by comparison, was also collected together, but over a far shorter period of time. So, you know, I'm thinking just practically it makes sense that the community responsible for that would have had a more cohesive conversation around this topic.
Makes sense. Let me pick up one passage, and this will be probably the last one we can deal with today. It's a famous passage from Job. I know that my Redeemer liveth. Now, Christians have typically said that Redeemer is Jesus. But if you look at the Old Testament concept, behind that word Redeemer is the word Goel. And Goel is a very vivid, even vicious term of the near kinsman who comes to rescue a person's family, name, family, and honor. And when you read it, it probably means that is, I know that my Redeemer liveth, that my near kinsman is going to come and vindicate me. That's what Goel meant. Now, it's a very small step to say that's also a picture of Christ. But in the Old Testament, it meant something quite different.
Yeah.
Now, another biblical story that builds on that term, Goel, is the story of Ruth. Mm-hmm. And Boaz was the Goel who came to rescue the family name. See? But the most vivid one is the story of the cities of refuge, where the near kinsmen came, and if you kill somebody without
malice.
Yeah. But he still could get you. And you had to scamper. I mean, read it in Numbers 35. It's an amazing story. We would say, if you're innocent, you're innocent. But no, you had to go and be in the safe place, and you had to stay there until the death of the high priest. See? Now, that's very much an Old Testament concept. But as Dave would say, in the large picture, it makes perfectly good sense, because God is going to be a place where we will have resolution. It will be hope, one which is perhaps more closely tied to our needs and wants today, not that long, stretched-out stuff that you find in the Old Testament.
I'm intrigued by your statement about active hope. Is that what you said, Jody?
Mm-hmm.
I like that the more I think about it, that hope is not a static thing. It's something that has to function on a day-to-day basis and be kept alive.
And it can't be passive. You know, we chuckle about that song. You're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good, you know. But I feel like in the biblical text, we have many examples of wrestling with... Think for instance, in the New Testament, where you have some phrases that say the kingdom of God is here, and some phrases that say...
Still coming.
It's coming. And it's not a matter of which of those is correct. It's not like one writer was saying one thing and trying to convince the other, and then they went back and forth, and we as a reader have to choose.
Yeah, they're both true.
They're both true. And we can actively hope.
Today we've looked for the common ground between the Testaments, and it's amazing. In broad outline, as Dave says, they've worked together. The key word, it seems to me, is restoration. Both Testaments affirm a restored universe, one where the wolf and the lamb live together in peace. Christians live in hope in that restoration, a universe where no one eats anyone else. My thanks to Dave Thomas and Jody Washburn, my conversation partners, to Christine Byerly, our program engineer, to each of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.